This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Well, hello once more to Rack Addicts After Hours. Now, that doesn't make sense as an intro, does it? Well, hello, and well, hello to. Hello, hi, hip, yep, it's smooth. It's an incredible, flawless intro that Pete's not going to edit out. Welcome! It's 109, that's the number of the episode that we're doing now, and it started strangely. I hope you haven't tuned off. It's Ben that you're listening to, and Pete is here as well, and this is a music and technology podcast. You might not have noticed, or you might, because you've been here before. I'm feeling strange this evening. Yes. What have you been up to, Pete?
I have been getting in deep with my hologram microcosm, which arrived a couple of weeks ago, and I have been running my Dreadbox Typhon through it.
Most delicious. I think, what were you doing before? You're doing something summit-shaped, and you said it was just a bit reverb-y before you'd really got stuck in.
Yes, the summit didn't really suit it because it's obviously very paddy in parts and those sort of type sounds. It needs something with fast attack and not much sustain.
To make use of all those little particulate type sounds.
Yes, the sort of granularly, tinkly so-and-so.
Granules of Typhon.
But the Typhon does seem to suit. It has an internal sequencer and it has a lot of patches that are... They already have effects per se. They're quite effective. But you know what I'm like. I like to affect things that are already affected.
Said it many times. You can never have too much reverb.
The microcosm is... It can be very reverby, as I've said before, but it also... So if you get it just right and get it on something like the mosaic settings and you have the right sound going through it, it can really enhance what you're doing. It almost creates secondary melodies.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. You hear these things and you think, is that originally it? And you find yourself switching, hitting the foot switch on and off going, is that actually the original patch or is that something that's emanating from the effects pedal?
Cool. So quite surprising and inspiring potentially.
Yes. And it, awesome. It'd be something that I will definitely do in a live scenario once I've got something tangible together. So I would imagine that I'm going to add the 1010 Music Black Box and then have that as a little trio. So it'll be Black Box... And the Typhon going through the microcosm. And
compact.
Then that'll be it. I suppose I need some sort of mixing. Or maybe not, because it's only one instrument. Or two, because I've got the black box. I didn't really think it through properly. I do have some other small mixers I can use. There's always something.
Always something in the stable that could be used.
And on top of that, I've also purchased... one of these, just to see how they check out.
Oh, one of the Doobries. What was this? Episode ago? Two episodes ago?
I can't remember when we first talked about them.
I'm holding in my hand the Clark Technic Mic Booster CM1 that is, for legal reasons, not a cloud lifter. Where's yours? It's over there. So, yeah, smaller than a cloud lifter, but very much that same idea.
Yes. So they retail in the UK for around £29.
Not too bad.
Something. I can't remember if it's just £29 dead.
Folded metal and it feels okay.
Yes, averse to the actual cloud lifter, which retails in the UK for approximately £169.
And what you're listening to my voice through, the Triton Audio Fethead, somewhere in the middle-ish at about 60.
Yes, a bit more reasonable. So... obviously, as soon as I got this, I unscrewed it and was quite curious to what's inside. So what you have is the male and female XLR sockets, which are at each end of the steel box.
I imagine they actually take up quite a lot of the room inside there anyway.
They're not too bad, but they both kind of attach to a very thin, I want to say about 3/4 inch, 1.5 centimetre wide bit of circuit board.
Yeah.
And on that circuit board, approximately... two capacitors, two small chips, surface mount, and a selection of other components, which I assume are just maybe some resistors and some small capacitors. And that's it. I thought, okay, I'll open the cloud lifter and see what's in there.
Oh, yeah.
And there's even less.
Oh, no.
There's just two small surface mount chips and then some small surface mount resistors and maybe... capacitors, and that's it. So I'm thinking that for once this is either extremely good value, the Clark Technic / Behringer gain booster for dynamic mics, or
we're getting horribly ripped off.
The Cloud Lifter is ridiculously overpriced. Yep.
Cool. Yeah, that's kind of worrying. I mean, if you think about it, the FET head that I've got here is basically just a male to female XLR kind of cylindrical adapter thing. So whatever circuitry is in these kind of stuff, it's got to fit into a tiny space for it to work here.
Well, Clark Technique also do an inline one that looks very similar to your one.
It's probably got just the same thing, just a different shape.
I think they've all got the same thing. So I'm really coming to the opinion, as we said earlier, that the Cloud Lifter is ridiculously overpriced for what it is. Admittedly, it's in a much larger steel chassis, and you can see the quality of the materials. The XLR sockets are substantially more beefy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got the kind of the release pin, the push thing on one end, haven't you?
Yes, and they've also got a kind of metal collar on them, where these are just plastic inside the case. But having said that, it's not as if you're going to be abusing this and throwing it around at all.
In many cases, it probably just gets plugged in once and is never unplugged again until the whole system is, you know, removed.
Certainly. I can see myself buying or grabbing another one of these, but the inline version as well.
Yeah.
But I suspect it's exactly the same electronics inside. Yes. So for once, possibly, we'll have to test this, but for once, it is possibly far more economical and better to buy the Clark Technique version than going to or purchasing one of the more expensive versions, the Cloud Lifter or the SE one, which the dynamite thing,
or the Soyuz launcher, which is definitely more on the Cloud Lifter end of pricing.
Yes. What cool. can I say? There's not a lot more I can say to that.
Is there anything I would ever recommend? No, I don't think there's anything I like of theirs before knowledge of this. We'll find out.
Well, we understand how they proceed with their things. They look at various products in the marketplace and they go, how can we reproduce this? And I suspect there's a certain amount of reverse engineering going on. I note that there's a whole plethora of new products that have just appeared from them, and some are badged as Clark Technique and some are badged as directly as Behringer.
Yeah.
They are definitely complete, should I say, rip-off?
I think the friendly thing that we have been saying before is clones.
Okay, so they're definitely clones of the other brands. Notably, one I saw the other day. Are you familiar with the new, I don't know how new it is, but there's a kind of super duper Mackie Big Knob, but it's actually got an audio interface built in.
Is that the Big Knob Studio Plus?
I would imagine so.
Yeah, I've seen that one. That's quite an old one. The Big Knob lines. I retract my statement from earlier. I have a Big Knob passive at home, which I use for my vinyl setup, and it's great because it's passive. There's nothing to go wrong.
Well, what looked like an almost identical copy turned up, and it happened to be, I think it was Behringer. I can't remember. It could have been Clark Technique. Most probably Behringer. Just looking at it. Also, what I saw the other day was a speaker controller, i.e. volume controller with the ability to switch through or switch between speakers and inputs. And it was a dead ringer for my SPL that I have in my studio.
Oh, the silver one.
No, this is black. It looks exactly the same as the SPL. It's about a half rack width, about 2U high.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking the same thing.
But,
yeah.
You know, if you squint, you'd think you're looking at an SPL.
Yeah.
And an SPL will run you to, again, 650 or something like that. I can't imagine the Behringer one being anywhere near that kind of cost at all.
Suspicious.
But when you get to that level, it's difficult, isn't it? You know, you especially after this situation, you start wondering, are the sort of branded manufacturers taking the mickey a bit with the pricing?
Pulling a bit of a fast
But also, they've designed and developed the thing. Behringer are just coming along and looking at that and go, oh, we could reproduce that.
I'll have that.
A little couple of changes just to keep us on the right side of the copyright or the patent or whatever, if there is, if those exist. But you can also, what's it, when you take the essence of a product, you know, if you use the sort of similar colour scheme, there's a name, you're not really...
I know. There's this certain word, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a sort of the IP, isn't it? There's sort of intellectual property that you're sort of dealing with. But they go very close to the wire, don't they?
They do. Yeah, most definitely.
Anyways, but yeah, we'll try it out. And if it's any good, I'll be certainly happy to recommend these to anybody that requires a gain booster.
Awesome.
So, what have you been doing this week?
I've been chewing on a new album. Newish.
Physically? Just literally give it a little bit
really
of a gnaw?
Getting on. Yeah. So, there is a phenomenon that I've experienced with albums and songs on their own, where you might come across a song in an album and you think, yeah, whatever, and you end up kind of skipping it a lot if you're listening to the album, or if you find a new band and you're really going through the whole discography, you might skip out a whole album. What I've found on the bands that I've been listening to for the longest time is my favourite songs end up being the ones I initially skipped. So most recently, this has happened with a band called Don Broco, who are from my hometown of Bedford. They went to my school, actually, Bedford Modern School. I didn't know that until I was Googling them the other day. Now, they have a new album out called Amazing Things. And yeah, when it first came out, I was practically skipping the whole thing. There were a couple of singles which just didn't land for me. And then maybe one of them did. Either way, for some reason, I thought, yeah, I'll get tickets to go see them. They had a show in Kingston recently. I went with my partner and we had an absolute blast and it was amazing. And now we're completely obsessed with the album, even though before we'd both agreed and gone, yeah, it's just nothing's quite working. And now it's great. We really like it and we can't stop listening to it. Odd.
Isn't that quite often the case, that those things that you have to either work a little bit harder to get into, or they're a bit of a slow burn and they take a little bit of time to soak in, that they're the ones that have a bit more possible substance about them, they take a little bit longer to get a handle on what they're about.
But yeah, most of my favourite Genesis songs are the ones that I skipped way back when. It definitely happens.
It's quite often the media that you kind of get the instant hit off. It's the sort of thing that it gets sickly after a while. You get fed up with them. Whereas, as I say, the songs or films or things that you have to work a little bit harder tend to have a bit more longevity about them.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I'm very glad it's happened, because we bought more tickets to see them again in exactly the same venue about 3 weeks after we first saw them. Hooray! So Don Broco, Amazing Things. It's chunky sort of rock, and they've gone in sort of an angry direction.
Angry rock.
It's kind of angry. Sort of shouty rap type bits, which is not my normal thing
at all. Are they really angry, or is it just
it just sounds angry. I mean, I listen to lots of metal, which gets probably top of the angry pile. But before that, they were doing kind of slightly funky rock stuff. I'm terrible at describing genres and what kind of music. Either way, it's a different direction, and it's kind of interesting and cool. Check it out. You might like it. The other part of my weekly update. It's quite an important one. And if we weren't afraid of copyright sort of things, we would probably play Carl Orff's O Fortuna as I reach into my bag to show you something, Pete.
Oh, what is this?
Prepare yourself.
I'm braced.
O Fortuna. Hip, hoop, hip. There it is.
Oh, you've made a purchase.
Oh, he has. A synthy purchasey boy. It's a Make Noise No Coast. Second hand for quite a screamer of a deal. I've got a modular synth again. Oh
yes.
My.
I certainly fancy those way more than, let's say, a Mother 32 or anything like that. I'd much rather have, and I think we've talked about this before, I'd much rather have the trifecta of the Make Noise desktop units than the Moog desktop units.
Totally. I was thinking about the modular stuff, and I decided that, yes, I will take my own advice that I always give to people, and I was thinking about synth voices. And though it's not especially Eurorack mountable, you can if you really want to. Yeah, that's where I've ended up, slightly West Coast and weird.
Do you see yourself getting any of the other two units?
I don't know. I haven't really given the Strega much time, because when it was sort of announced, I watched a few demo videos. It seemed a bit one-dimensional to me. The effects on it, I think, are quite interesting, but overall not quite my speed.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a hankering for a slightly wonky controllery sequencery thing, and I do like the kind of stuff that you can do with it, the no control is definitely a higher option on my list.
So possibly maybe grab one of those in the future to partner with the
possibly Coast. Yeah, and there are some wonderful little wooden stands that people have made for the little three-tiered thing, and it would be cool to do that. No plans as yet, but that's going to be where I start.
So how long have you had it?
Oh, it arrived today.
Okay, not very long at all.
Yeah, not long at all. All I've done is just test that it seems to function. I just plugged something in to make it make a noise and wibbled around, and it seems totally fine. Didn't have any patch cables in the box, so I need to go home and have a wiggle.
Well, I've got plenty here. Or you've got plenty of patch cables
I do,
still left.
Yes.
Well, I have seen a few Ocosts going at good prices. If you keep your eye out and you don't panic and buy the first one that you see and hang on, they come up. How much did you pay for that one, if it's not a rude question?
Of course not. This one was $325 and a tenner for shipping.
That's very reasonable.
Yeah, I was pleased. I think the guy was asking for $350, and I thought I'd slip in a cheeky one, and he went for it. So
fair enough.
Thank you very much, nameless individual from Facebook.
Okay. I was just about to ask that because of our conversation last week about various modes of or methods of reselling your equipment. So you went perusing Facebook or one of the groups on there.
Actually, I don't think I was really on the lookout. I'm just going to double check my WhatsApps, but I think most of today, Anthony from the ModCaf has basically been sending me eBay listings. He's been saying, "Ooh, look at this. Ooh, look at this. Ooh, check this out. No, stop trying to make me spend money." But I think it was one of those. He sent me one on Facebook or something. And then I thought, and found this one. Or let me scroll. Still scrolling. Scrolling. Yes, Anthony just sent me the listing and I just went for it pretty much.
Well, again, that's a very good price, so it's not as if you're going to lose any money on that.
No, I could even make money, so I'm not really concerned.
That's the main thing. But the main, well, I say that, the main thing is that you actually have some fun and games with it.
I'm quite excited. Then when the case materializes, it won't be the frustrating start of, wow, I've got a Radio Music and nothing else, you know.
Do you still have your Keystep, or did that?
I do. I was actually quite close to selling it, but I'm glad I didn't.
I think that sort of tool is invaluable. I think
absolutely.
If you have any intention of jumping in and out of modular or anything of that ilk, it's mostly prudent to hang on to those things, a Keystep or a Beatstep. Mm-hmm. I suppose you can get them again, but
why bother?
Yes, if you've already got it.
Yeah, so I'll be taking that home this evening and getting stuck in. I might grab the manual and explore some of the, well, it will describe each section and I'll have a really get stuck in. I was editing some of the last performance showcase ModCaf things, including your performance, and I think the first one that's going to go up will be the first one of that particular show, which was Basil and his original 1972 EMS Synthy AKS. What's always been cool about hearing Basil do his thing is he's had it since 1972 or 73 or something when he got it, and you can tell he really knows it. He's pulled that synth inside and out, and he knows what he's doing. And actually, when you mentioned the other bits of the no-coast shaped ecosystem, it would be nice to get to that level of familiarity with an instrument, actually in a similar way to what Akira does with the shared system, really eking out all the incorrect, strange routings that lead to surprising results. It'd be good to get that stuck in, I think.
Well, there's no hard and fast rules. I mean, anything goes. That's the whole joy of Eurorack, per se. Are we going to expect any small performances at the Modular CAF with this unit?
Well, what have we got? We've got about 5 months of them sort of booked in, and I dare say in that time I will have amassed enough things to do something concrete, so maybe.
Well, I'll look forward to it.
I would love to perform again. Actually, I think going to my first proper sweaty gig since the whole pandemic situation has lit a fire in the belly, as they say. I do want to get performing again.
I was quietly confident that you'd get your synthy mojo back at some point.
Thank you for believing in me. Yay. Speaking of synthy mojo, would you look at this? We've actually got synthy news to talk about, and there's a good one from a brand we like. Pete, do you want to chew on this? I've got a little bit to add to the end as well, because I had had a wonder about it. But fire away.
Well, these just popped up very suddenly.
Oh, yeah. Suddenly.
Just after we, I think it was just prior to publishing last week's episode, but after we'd recorded it. So it was too late to make the cut, so to speak. But a flotilla of YouTube videos appeared from all the usual suspects.
The old synchronized release type thing.
So 1010 Music, who've produced these two small or micro units, I would like, or nano as they describe them.
They are teeny tiny.
I'm rather taken by these, to be honest, because of their size and specific task setup.
I'm rather excited by the, can't remember which one's which, the yellow flavoured one.
The lemon drop.
Yes.
I've heard both of them, but I think they're both good.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But I'm intrigued by the teeny tiny size. We're looking at...
Yeah, 1.5 by 3.75 by 3 in the old money. That's inches.
In inches, yeah. Very small. It's tiny.
I always think that the Typhon is really small, but these are smaller, aren't they? I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these are, I mean, way smaller.
Yeah.
A fraction of the size. These are...
You're practically talking fatter, as in deeper, thicker, but pocket operator scale almost.
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking. I mean, this is a... Maybe this is going to be a new subcategory, sort of micro instruments.
I think the first step into this corner might have been the NTSF1 or NTFS1, that Korg thing. You know how it was a full digital monosynth and it was super teeny tiny. Obviously nowhere near the capability.
Yes.
But something that actually sounds really, really good, but super tiny.
It had a sort of flavour of that kit thing. You've got to build it where these are fully formed and I would imagine made very well. They look quite robust. And minimal controls, touch-sensitive screen. The current price I've got hold of is $399 each.
Well, I'm sorry, I've actually interrupted you so many times that we actually haven't said what they are.
Yes. I might be there.
Suspense.
Yeah, working around. So, 1010 Music. We quite like 1010 Music. Mm-hmm. I've got the black box, which I still haven't really spent any serious amount of time with, but I'm intending to get to it this week. Have brought out what they describe as nanobox modules, and there's two flavors. There is the lemon drop, which is predictably yellow, and the fireball, which is sort of predictably red. And they're very interesting in respect to the capabilities for something so small.
Yeah,
I know that obviously with modern electronics it's quite possible to do that, but it's quite interesting that they've decided to go for this format. That does kind of reduce the amount of physical ins and outs. And when it comes to things like MIDI, they're using dongles. What did you describe those MIDI?
Yeah, they're just MIDI dongles.
Yeah, I suppose.
TRS
so.
Adapters.
Yeah, so they're using TRS to 5-pin DIN MIDI adapters. Other than that, I'm quietly interested.
Yeah, so what's the polyphony? We've got a wavetable polysynth in one and a polyphonic granular synthy boy in the other, haven't we?
Yes. And it's the fact that they have, well, let's have a look. The Lemon Drop includes 153 presets, and that is built out of 311 wave files.
They appear to both be 8-voice.
Yes, which is
amazing.
And it's quite a lot more polyphony than quite a few other things that are way more expensive.
30 seconds of sample memory per oscillator for the granular boy. That's cool.
Yeah. And then going on to the Fireball includes 123 presets, and that's built out of 103 wavetables.
2,048 samples per cycle, 256 cycles. Good high-spec conversion in there as well.
It does seem to be the way that a lot of these type of units are 5 volts and they just utilize phone charger type or USB power. Well, unfortunately, we don't stock 1010 Music products in the store.
No, so you can't be tempted.
I think I'm going to suggest that we do stock them.
Yeah, they've got a much more appealing lineup to the kind of music shop that I say we are, you are, now that it's not just Eurorack stuff. Would be a bit odd. Yes, it would be great to stock them now that they have a lineup that's more appealing to the slightly less nerdy music shop that not we are, but you are. Before they were just Eurorack and that was kind of it. But now
we've got quite a range. I mean, you've still got the black box.
The black box and the blue box, these two, then all the Eurorack stuff. That's it at the moment, isn't it?
So they've got the Bitbox Mark II.
Yeah.
They've got the smaller one, which I can't remember the name. Sort of mini.
Bitbox Micro or something?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Just pull up their website. Okay, yeah, so Blue Box, Black Box, the two Nano Boxes. Then there's the Bitbox Micro. They're both Mark II, I think. And I think they've kind of discontinued all the other versions of it because with the Bitbox, you can just swap all the different firmwares that they had for sampling, sequencing, drum machine. I can't remember what they were.
Because they had a separate one that was a sequencer.
Yeah.
Whereas the Black Box, the desktop version, has the sequencer and the sampling built in. They also had the laser controller.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Which I nearly bought at one stage, and I mean, obviously, I'll have to try and chase a second-hand one down, but I thought that would be quite interesting the magic combo of modular and lasers simultaneously.
The Wave Razor, that's what it was. Or the Laser Box, one of those.
And they're all discontinued now.
Yeah. Damn. Toolbox, FX Box, Synth Box were the older ones.
Yeah.
Anyway, nice one. There's tons of demos out there, so do have a listen, but I think you will be impressed.
Was there anyone
listeners.
Particular that you did listen to?
I jumped through the Sonic State one because Gaz Williams is amazing.
Okay.
And that was it.
I think I did the Lollipop one.
Oh, yeah. If you want the full rundown, he's always the guy to go to, isn't he?
I think he went through both of them. I cannot remember. But yes, I was suitably impressed.
So from 1010 to a little bit of something that I've found. Do you remember the 21st night? No. couldn't resist. There's an Erica Synths Matrix mixer that has that LED thing from the Syntrax. Do you remember that? It turned up a while ago.
I'm not sure. If I saw a picture of one, I'd mostly go, oh, yeah, that thing.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go and get the picture.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
There we are. So there's that. And then Future Sound Systems have a similar type thing. It's a 4x4 matrix mixer for pedals and such, but these are desktop units, and there's a new one that's come out by DF Audio. They call it the Mini Bay, and it's a patch bay, as you might imagine. The same kind of idea as your 19-inch rack mountable patch bays that would grace every studio in the known universe, but it's a little desktop one, so it's full quarter inch stuff on the back, but then it's all mini jacks on the top, just to make it a little bit more accessible and less miserably expensive.
What is the suggested usage case for such a product?
Same deal as any studio patch bay would, so you could have your outboard, but this one is also designed for people who want to use pedals as outboard and integrating things in that kind of way. Because it's desktop, it'll be way easier to keep it flexible in a changing studio, I imagine.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, I've just got one of those Samson ones in the 19-inch rack, and I just can sort of swivel around in my chair and repatch something.
Yeah, if you've got the gear and it's going to stay there, it's great. But yeah, if you want to move stuff around, it could be a bit of a pain. But this one is $200 Australian, so 150 US. But yeah, it's a low price of entry, which I quite like.
Yeah.
Small bit of news, that one. And another small bit of news, remember the old favourite that was a pain in the ass at the shop? No, it was a pain in the backside. No, it was awful. Whatever. Do you remember that device that was quite annoying for quite a long time at the shop? The OPZ from Teenage Engineering?
Yes.
Well, there's another doodad that's probably going to go wrong that you can put in the back. This one is Line IO. You've got sync for pocket operators, much like you do on the OpLab and also MIDI on TRS. But then this one adds, in the two other sockets, a line in and a line out, both stereo. Just makes it a bit more flexible. What I used to do when I played with my live that one time was pan my drums to the left and everything else to the right, so I had a rudimentary two-channel kind of situation, which worked okay, but this would give you more flexibility if for some reason you're still using the OPZ in a bit more of a complicated manner.
What was the first module they brought out that went in the back?
That's the OpLab. That's the yellow one that caused all the problems because they hardly ever worked. Or was it the OPZ being warped that made it not work? That was... Oh, yeah, so that was the same sync on this one, MIDI in and out on TRS for the dongles, but then instead of line in and out, it had stereo sockets that did CV and gate, so you could do modular integration, which is why I got it at the time.
Does this new module that they are or have released, have they released it? Or is it coming?
Spring.
This new module that they're intending to release shortly, does it go into the same receptacle on the back? So you can't have more than one.
Yes.
So you've got to get the one that most suits your workflow, basically.
Yeah, because that won't be the subwoofer that they made. Remember that? Did anyone buy them? I don't know.
Are we talking about the floor speaker thing?
No.
No, that's the...
No, it was they called it a subwoofer, and it was that same size, the teeny tiny thing, and it was like a rumble pack or something. Yeah, it's a weird product, the OPZ. There's a lot going for it, but a huge amount that just makes it frustrating and irritating, especially the 2 years of it not quite working properly.
I just imagine them ending up in the Lego box with the rest of your Legos.
Strange ones, but there you go. There is an extra option for your integration coming soon. If you wanted for some reason.
Yeah, I remember you being very excited prior to you getting one and yes. then not so excited after you got it.
Yeah, I did sell it for a decent price though, so in the end it wasn't the worst thing in the world.
So it got away clean.
Yes, because mine did actually work. I really feel for the people that had ones that warped, ones that had all the re-triggering issues, people that then bought the modules that wouldn't work.
Well, they're still selling them.
Yep. I wonder if they ever fixed any of it. They never publicly acknowledged that it was all a bit of a disaster,
mm-hmm.
because that's how teenage engineering works. Yay.
Mm.
So, I guess we can wrap up this one. That's the end of the news. Before we move into the section of the podcast, we've got ModCafs happening, and I've actually edited some of the videos. So soon, if you go to youtube.com/C/ModCaf, there will be the last of our performance showcase appearing soon with Basil, who I mentioned earlier, and also Pete, as Rack Addicts, did your... What's the thing called? The thing that's the shape of the stuff that the word's just completely gone from my brain. What's it called?
It was just the wave state
yes.
going through the night sky.
Yes, that was the one, just, and it was delicious.
Just an ambient thing.
That will be up there at some point, soonish. Check it out. It's miscellaneous multimedia recommendation time. Have you got yours primed and ready to go, Pete?
I do.
Fire away.
Right. As we've discussed many times, we both have an appreciation of watching people who are very skilled at their chosen professional practice.
Another one of those.
Doing them exceedingly well.
Mm-hmm.
They're
wonderful.
Almost therapeutic or cathartic to watch. There's something, there's no anxiety, is there? Because you know that they're so competent that it's like one of these stories or films or something where there's no real angst because you always know the hero's going to get yeah. out without, you know, easy to watch and digest.
There's a similarity between the feeling that I get from those videos and Studio Ghibli films, which I will not even try and put into words. Yeah, but it's there. Who have you got?
Warm and fuzzy. Okay, there's quite a few of these type of channels on YouTube, let's say, but this is a particular one I've landed on and have enjoyed. But are you familiar with the type of YouTube channel where they restore things?
Vaguely, I've not consumed much.
So it's somewhat on the line of one that you mentioned before. I think you talked about someone doing watches a long
yes,
way back.
I think actually that was yours. I think you mentioned one, which might not have been the actual channel, but it's Wristwatch Revival.
Okay.
Which I then...
I knew that someone had
forgot.
Mentioned.
I forgot you mentioned it, and then I came across it on my own and realised it was amazing. But yeah, that's the only one that I've seen anything
And then
of.
There's other ones that will just... Oh, there's all sorts of restoration, and they go through mm-hmm. the whole process, and some are edited better than others,
yeah.
and they have a flow, but they're very compelling for some reason. You just sit there. Sometimes I'm yeah. lazy and I skip to the end and see how, you know, see the finished product, but generally I like to see the stages. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the one that I've been enjoying recently is called Awesome Restorations.
Oh, yeah, straight to the point.
And some of the articles that the gentleman on the show has chosen to restore are quite wide and varied. So it does the standard things like very corroded lighters, like the sort of Zippo type things, special ones, and axes, old axes and bits of equipment. But he also does other things which are quite interesting, like some of the Toy Story toys.
Oh, interesting. So I'm imagining lots of people who like that scene from Toy Story 2 where the restoration man goes and gives Woody a fresh coat of paint.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Well, the two that I've seen which were actually Toy Story toys were there was a Woody and there was a Buzz Lightyear, and both have seemed to have been brutalised.
No.
I think it's a bit like the first film when the kid was sort of blowing them up in the... Yeah, and he was blowing them up in his backyard and doing horrendous things. These two toys have been really brutalised. They had a sort of Halloween makeover, say, and
yeah.
the bits chopped out and all sorts. And the gentleman does a complete restoration, because
yeah.
that's part of the interest for me, because you think, well, that's plastic and that's sort of rubber. How is he going to tackle restoring that, because half his face is missing? But he does an exquisite job. These things are...
Nice.
You cannot tell they've been restored. So that's the joy of these videos. So that's my recommendation for this week. It's the YouTube channel called Awesome Restorations.
Nice one. And I'm going back on the music train. I have already recommended the Don Broco thing, but I shall go in a different direction on this one. I had a catch-up with our ex-colleague and friend, Sam Rushton, from the shop, which was great. he makes some really cool music, which is relatively close to the Doom soundtrack in some ways. So unreasonably punchy and loud and angry, but slightly less of the guitar influence and more on the electronic corner, so really big synths and such, but often with, if not actual acoustic drums, acoustic sounding drum samples. You might want to check out bands or artists like Perturbator or Carpenter Brute, but the one I'll recommend today is The Algorithm, and the specific song is Cryptographic Memory, and I will not even bother trying to describe it anymore. Influences from many directions, not just electronic, but I haven't found a name for the kind of genre to be able to easily explore and find more of it, but I'm obsessed. It's great. There we are. Cryptographic Memory by The Algorithm. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to our podcast. It'll be episode 110 next time you listen to us. You have an excellent week. Farewell.